Welcome to the Essential Church Podcast. Our goal is to strengthen and equip church and ministry leaders just like you through practical and theological discussions about some of the most pressing and important issues facing the local church today. We feature conversations with members of our team here at New Life Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, as well as interviews with authors and thinkers from around the world. You can follow the essential.church on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Watch episodes on our YouTube channel and also subscribe to our podcast via iTunes and Spotify, where you'll find a full archive of previous conversations. And now, here is this week's episode of the Essential Church Podcast.
Welcome to this episode of the Essential Church Podcast, an ongoing conversation about some of the most important issues facing the local church today. I am your host, Andrew Arndt, and today I want to take you to an interview that we did not long ago with Wynn Collier. Wynn is the former pastor of All Souls Church in Charlottesville, Virginia, and now he's the director of the Eugene Peterson Center at Western Theological Seminary up in Holland, Michigan. Just a couple days ago, he released an extraordinary book called A Burning in My Bones. It's the authorized biography of Eugene Peterson. Eugene and Wynn were friends for over 20 years, and when Eugene was coming in towards the end of his life, Wynn approached him with the idea to put together a biography, which he talks about here. And I got to tell you, I've read a lot of biographies, read a lot of spiritual memoirs, and this is as good as they get. Wynn stewards the Eugene Peterson story so well. There are so many great little nuggets here. I think it's going to add some depth and perspective for a lot of you who have admired Eugene Peterson for many years. And for those of you that don't know Eugene's work very well, this is going to be a great introduction for you. So it's myself and Daniel Grothy and Glenn Packiam interviewing Wynn Collier. We hope you enjoy the program. Well, all right, friends, we're here today with one of our good friends, Wynn Collier. Wynn has been a pastor for over 25 years and was the founding pastor of All Souls Church in Charlottesville, Virginia, and currently resides with his family in Holland, Michigan, with his wife, Miska, and his boys, Wyatt and Seth. I think Wyatt actually is off at college, so Wyatt is not in Holland with you. Mm-hmm. But with Seth anyway, where he directs the Eugene Peterson Center and serves as an associate professor of pastoral theology and Christian imagination at Western Theological Seminary. We're going to ask you about that work in just a second here, but he's the author of five books, including, and this is the reason we're talking to him today, including A Burning in My Bones, the authorized biography of Eugene Peterson, which just came out this past week. So Wynn, we're grateful to have you on the program with us today.
I'm really glad to be with you guys. Good to see you again. I think the last time I was in the same room with two of you was actually at Eugene's funeral. So yeah.
Yeah, well, we're so honored that you'd be on the program, man. And your book is a fabulous book. We've all had a chance to read it. We're going to talk about that in a second here. But I'd love for you just to talk about how the transition from Charlottesville to Holland is going. And tell us a little bit about your work at the Eugene Peterson Center over there at Western.
Yeah, well, it's been a beautiful transition. It's been a surprise in many ways. My intention had been to retire from All Souls. And just the way that God has drawn us into this new place and community and work has been a really beautiful thing. So we're helping to launch the Eugene Peterson Center for Christian Imagination. And the hope is that we'll be able to continue the conversation that Eugene began among the same kinds of people that Eugene was having that conversation with. So with pastors, with creative folks, writers and musicians and artists, and then with this sort of large group of, I just call them curious, befuddled, hoping to be faithful Christians. Mm. And so what we're not doing is building a mausoleum to Eugene, and we're not going to just spend the next decade only asking the question, what would Eugene say? But really what I imagine is, how I see Eugene is that he was a witness for us to the deep reality of God and a particular way of being faithful in our world, and that we hope to join with others and be a witness like he was.
Yeah, well, we agree with that. I think when I'm speaking personally here, I think that more than any other modern pastor, I think that Eugene's presence and his witness are with me on a daily basis. I think about, okay, so what was he trying to do, and how would that work here? So what you're doing there is such important work. It's a massive undertaking. We're praying for you, and we bless you in that work. I want you, Wynn, if you don't mind, just give us a little bit wider angle on your relationship with Eugene and Jan Peterson and what led to this project in the first place. How did it come about?
So I have to step back probably about 22, 23 years. I was in Denver, a bivocational pastor at a small church that was struggling. And one Sunday after church, one of the elders in the church came up to me and handed me a copy of Working the Angles, The Shape of Pastoral Integrity. And he said to me, "Wynn, I think you'll like this book." And I went home and started to read it before Sunday afternoon nap. And I realized a couple of years later that I think what he really meant was, "Wynn, I think you need this book." And he was right. I had really struggled with this question of, like, what does it mean to be a pastor? And I didn't have any language for it. And I was only probably a few paragraphs in, and something deeply profound pierced my soul. Mm. And I felt like I had the starting of a language. And so it just started me down a long road of reading Eugene. And my first book, the publisher had also published some of Eugene, and I got one of his friends there to give me his address. And then, like so many, like y'all,
sounds familiar.
I started to write him letters and thought that I was unique in the fact that I was getting letters back from him, only to find out 2 decades later, as I had literally thousands of letters in my cellar, you know, there was nothing unique about this. But that was the thing about Eugene, is he wouldn't let you know that. And so he just became my pastor through letters. And then in 2016, I went to Montana for a pastoral retreat, had lunch with him, went to their house and asked him to pray for me, asked for him to pray a blessing over me, which he and Jan did. And I was going back home flying and just started thinking about that, you know, his days were coming to an end. Yeah. And that someday somebody was going to tell his story. And I started thinking about what I hoped that story would be and do, and how it would imbibe Eugene, not just tell the facts of his story. Yes. And, you know, nothing really worse than a bad biography. Yeah. That's used as a caricature, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I got home, a friend of mine who's an editor said, "You should tell Eugene that." I thought the last thing in the world Eugene cares about or is interested in is having a biography written. But he said, "Yeah, you're right, but you'll hate it if you never even tell him." So my next letter, I just told him, like, someday somebody's going to write your story, whether you want them to or not. Mm-hmm. And I appealed to Alexander White, which was the Scottish pastor, the biography that was very meaningful to him that he read multiple times over his life. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Somebody is going to do with you in your life what somebody did with Alexander." It was actually Alexander's son. Wow. And he called me up about 2 weeks later, that gravelly voice. We started talking for about 15 minutes. I basically just said again all the stuff I'd said in the letter. And I said, "Eugene, when you hear me talking about this, does this make you tired or does it give you energy?" And and he said, "You know, when makes me tired." So, and I said, like, that's what I thought. And I just expected we would say goodbye, you know? And for some reason, which I still don't understand, maybe it was the Holy Spirit, we just kept talking. And about 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, he said, "Wynn, I think I'm energized now. I think you're supposed to do this." Mm-hmm. And so just spent the next 2.5 years with he and Jan a lot, lugging papers and journals and manuscripts from Montana back to Virginia, interviewing scores of people. And it was daunting, to be real honest. I felt like I was in way, way over my head. Sure. And it was also a holy experience. Mm.
When you've done such a beautiful job with the book, I mean, it is, you wove together the themes, the stories, the prayers, the sermons in this beautiful tapestry. And all of us have been commenting about how it reflects the man himself, this sort of earthy spirituality. It's you're not glossing over the bumps in the story, but you do such a beautiful job. But one of the things that really piqued my interest was the way that you talked about his own sense of ecclesial belonging, if you will, like sort of which tradition became his home. And you describe that in this sort of unintentional or maybe a little haphazard, but kind of there's an intention behind it. Describe for us or for the listeners today kind of Eugene's own maybe vocational discovery, ecclesial belonging.
Man, Glenn, I'm really love that you asked that. Nobody else has asked me that question. Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand Eugene. You know, first of all, a lot of people don't understand that he grew up Pentecostal. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people assume that sort of in a huff or out of some great indignation, he left the Pentecostals.
Right. Yep,
and that's
right.
just not true. That's no. just not true. It was much more a matter of place and time and the people he was around and who invited him in. He wrote an article, I believe it was, if I remember right, for The Evangel, which
yep.
was, and the editor just hacked it to death. And it was actually even that kind of experience. He wrote a letter home to his mom and said, if they're going to do this to my writing, I'm not sure that they really want me here. Yeah. And at the same time, he was being invited into the Presbyterian world and they were just accepting what he had. And I think at the end of the day, it was much more a matter of what was in front of him.
Yeah.
And he felt invited into this ordination process, which he actually wasn't even looking for. Mm-hmm. So he said yes as an act of fidelity. Mm-hmm. Then he was ordained. And at that point was when the transition was made. And it's not to say that he wasn't deeply convinced by the theological
yeah.
sort of milieu, mm-hmm. but that wasn't really it. It was more that he felt like God had given him an invitation. Mm. And then it was simply a matter of, I made a vow.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the rest of his life, he was, for someone who had as deep an ecclesiology as he did, he was profoundly unenamored with
right.
Any kind of ideal about any church tradition.
Right.
And when he would be asked, why are you Presbyterian? He would say, because God put me here and I made a promise.
That's yep. it. Mm. Yep. That's mm. it.
You talk about when Eugene's journals, you were given 50 years of his journals to look through and to pray through, and Jan's as well. And so you're getting to see the behind the scenes, the times where he was excited, the times where he's groaning and where he's wanting to quit, and you're reading about the Badlands and all of this stuff. You're getting a sense of his interior life. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you highlighted is that a recurring prayer for him through the years was, Lord, make me a saint.
Mm-hmm.
Make me
mm-hmm.
a saint. Make me a saint. I want to quit. Make me a saint. I'm distracted. Make me a saint. I'm drinking too much. Make me a saint.
Mm-hmm.
So the saints of old would write about like sort of a spiritual gift of, let's just make up the word gravitas, you know? A saint has gravitas. So how do you think Eugene got that? Where did that come from for him in the wrestle?
That was probably one of the most profound moments for me in the writing was when I read that in his journal.
Mm.
And I think because it's not the sort of thing he would have said anywhere else.
Yeah.
I kind of even early on wanted that to be the title of the book.
Make me a saint.
But something like that,
yeah.
right. But I also was really aware that in our culture now, that was something I was going to have to show. I
sure.
couldn't mm-hmm. just say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to understand what Eugene meant by that, we have to understand how Eugene thought of as a saint.
Yeah.
A saint was not someone who had achieved this sort of nirvana-like
right.
spiritual experience.
Yes.
But a saint was someone who in their very human body
mm-hmm.
was being so ravished by the love of Christ
mm-hmm.
that their deep interior and their exterior were becoming congruent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so and I think over time it was this, and this is where the burning comes in, even though it's a direct allusion to
yeah.
his Jeremiah and the way the message translates that.
Mm.
But there was this growing burning mm-hmm. in Eugene for holiness,
mm-hmm.
for God,
mm-hmm.
that distractions would burn away.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, what he would say, a true saint is one who is becoming more and more human,
yes.
like
mm-hmm.
Jesus is here.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So it never, never, ever meant that Eugene was becoming less sensual, less
yeah.
human, less.
Yeah.
you know, anyone who knows him knows he detested that stuff. It's why he lived in Montana.
Yeah. Right.
So, but to specifically answer your question, I think that is where the gravitas came from. It came from this deep interior of longing for the presence of God that was doing its slow transformative work. And so that over the years, while he never fully escaped this, he came to care less and less about other people's perceptions of him and opinion of him. And he deeply longed for God, which made him the conundrum that he was to so many, because he just didn't live according to the polarities and assumptions and the rules of the game as we are sort of indoctrinated in. He was attuned to something else, and that felt otherworldly in a way, even though it was really rooted in this world.
Yeah. Which I love that you've just kind of, you know, highlighted or differentiated between holiness and the attaining to some sort of ideal. That isn't sort of the thing, and that's what I picked up in your summary of his life as well. One of the phrases Eugene said to us was, "There are no ideal conditions in which to live out this vocation as pastor." And in a moment where we were struggling with our own context of our church here in Colorado Springs, and maybe many of our listeners are thinking, "If only I was a pastor in a different context, or if only I wasn't in a you know, white majority evangelical American church, whatever the case might be, whatever the house is that we feel is burning around us," that your work channeling Eugene's life message here says to us, holiness is not about your life being ideal or your conditions being ideal, but somehow inviting or recognizing God's presence in the midst of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Eugene just insisted in a hundred different ways that all of our ideals have got to die.
Yes.
And I think maybe he would say that's one thing of what it means to die to the flesh. is like these ideals, these pictures, it's not the real world. It's not the person in front of us. It's not the congregation God's given us. It's not the neighborhood God's placed us in. Mm-hmm. It's not the actual passions and loves or inhibitions that we have. And until we let Jesus illuminate all of the actual realities of our life, then we're just going to be fighting against God.
Yep. I want to ask you a follow-up question to that. When I think about the life of Eugene Peterson and the witness of Eugene Peterson, to me, he's like the patron saint for the vow of stability, one people, one place over the course of your pastoral career. And I think the impression that can come about when we think of Eugene that way is that was easy for him. I think what was surprising and helpful to me as I read your book was realizing that he had to die many times over in order to fulfill that vow of stability. Can you just talk about that process for Eugene, how the vow of stability almost became a form of martyrdom for him, if that's a fair way of saying it?
Yeah. He loved the people, but he did not like the suburbs. he thought, you know, on their Monday Sabbaths hikes, he would see beautiful country, but he never thought Maryland was all that beautiful, not compared to Montana, you know. And it's also, a lot of people don't know, I mean, he tried to leave.
Yeah.
People don't know that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
times.
Not like he just, yeah, it was not like from day one, he was buckled in, you know. He really desperately tried to leave, and he got turned down.
Somebody turned down Eugene Peterson. Like, just imagine that. I just hope that every pastor who's listening to this receives that as a word of comfort directly from the Lord.
Right.
That's right. Absolutely. And you know, another thing, I think there's a lot of things that Eugene sort of stands for, but that we hear them in an abstracted way as some kind of eternal, you know, 11th commandment. And that just, Eugene didn't believe in abstract principles. You know, he was speaking to particular situations, and in general, he did feel like pastors in the American context that are overwhelmed by ambition or boredom, which was what he said with the two twin temptations, right? That there was this constant pull to something more. But he also, when a particular pastor would write him with a particular question, he wouldn't download that response.
Right.
he would hear their story. Yeah. And I have a letter in our archives where he laid out, you know, three reasons why it would be a good idea for a pastor to leave their church.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that. You talked about that even at the end of his, towards the end of his life, he was never dogmatic with people about that. About like, well, you have to stay there forever. There are good reasons to leave sometimes. Yeah. So it's not about an abstraction. It really is about the call of God.
Yes, and it, you know, the same thing with the thing most of us know him the best for, which was his deep dis-ease with the megachurch, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And that's true, absolutely, and for good reasons. But whenever he talked, and Daniel, I mean, this is part of your story, but whenever he talked with an individual person about their individual story, he started with, well, tell me about what God is doing in your life, and we'll work from there.
When my last visit with him, I went and sat and I walked down, you know, the steps from the driveway, and he and Jan were sitting there with a little drink in their hand, and Jan was reading him a novel, and I knocked on the door and they came and brought me in, and he sat down, put his foot up on the ottoman, and he was really just reeling. He was hurting after what he'd gone through toward the end of his life, and he wasn't fully cognitively there, and so he was struggling, and I was able to tell him, I said, Eugene, let me tell you what people are going to remember you for. They're not going to remember you for an interview. They're not going to remember. They're going to have 50 years of your body of work, mm-hmm, provoking the American mm-hmm. church. And I said, let me tell you the New Life Church we were when I first came to you. And I said, we had had one church and we were 15,000 members and we'd lost our pastor in a scandal and we'd had a double murder suicide and we were just reeling and we were embarrassed. We were on the front pages of every newspaper for all the wrong reasons. And I said, we've been reading you for over the last decade, and you become one of the chief rabbis around New Life. Mm-hmm. And now we're 8 congregations in our city that are micro congregations, all live preaching, mm-hmm. because pastoral ministry is local and personal. Yes. You taught us that.
Yes.
We're not piping in the stream. We're not trying to, you know, live off of gimmickry and adrenaline. You taught us that. And so I said, I want you to know the New Life you found us as. Mm. We're still a really large church, but now we're in a context where people can be known, yes, and people can be loved. And he sat there weeping. He looked at Jan. He said, could you believe that could happen? You know, so I was able to we were able to burn down some of the straw man arguments, and people want to make Eugene, you know, one thing or the other on the ends of the spectrum. Yeah, and Eugene is right there in the middle, listening to the person in front of him, pastoring and caring. And so we were able to just tell him our story changed because of your faithfulness.
That's so beautiful. And I think, you know, Eugene would probably also say to that, oh, that's wonderful. I couldn't do that. I'm so glad you can.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, I had this question that Eugene, toward the end, he was interviewed, and they said, what do you want it to be said about your life? What's the final statement about Eugene Peterson's ministry? And he said, I want to provoke the imagination of American pastors. And so I want to ask you, what do you think it is Eugene says to American pastors? What's the kernel of his provocation, his message to American pastors?
Well, if you allow me, I have to say one thing before I answer that. Is that okay?
Yep.
That moment was so telling to me because of how unique it was. Mm-hmm. He was asked that kind of question multiple times, mm-hmm. and normally he would defer. Yeah, he would, you know, legacy wasn't something he really spent a lot of time, but there was something that caught him in that moment.
Yeah.
That I think he felt, and I think he hesitated sometimes because he didn't want to just contribute again to this sort of celebrity bigger than life. I have some great thing to offer.
Hagiography.
The American.
Yeah.
Church.
Yeah.
Right. And I think at Western, we really struggled a little bit with, is it right to have a Eugene Peterson center?
Yeah.
Or are we just going to be playing with fire and contributing to the very thing Eugene resisted his entire life, which was celebrity?
Mm-hmm.
But when he answered that question, it smote me.
Yeah.
Because that is not a desire out of ambition. That is a desire out of deep hunger for God's presence to be awakened again.
Yes.
And so that's why I think, frankly, I felt the freedom to come here and do what I'm doing, because we don't have any like the idea that we're building something big that's going to somehow be a new model, like that couldn't be further from the truth.
Sure,
but we just want to be an echo.
Yeah.
So when you ask, what does Eugene contribute to the pastoral imagination? I recently wrote a little essay on what is Eugene's pastoral vision? And I felt, frankly, a little sheepish when I was done. And I feel sheepish now answering this, but it's the best I know to say is God. and I think y'all know what I mean, but we are so desperate to have God at the very core of our being again. All the upheaval that we're seeing, our racial sins coming home to roost, and the splintering of Christian group after Christian group, and the disintegration of our political system, and the exhaustion that's being evidenced all the more in the midst of a pandemic with churches and pastors sort of calling it uncle and stopping, and so many questions about what's the future going to hold, and I can tell you what the future holds is God. And God holds us. And if there's anything that Eugene offered me at the end of the day, it was he relentlessly pointed to the triune God. And that's really it. It wasn't any one thing he said. It wasn't a sermon he preached. It wasn't any one book.
Technique.
It was his...
Yeah. Not technique.
Stood in the middle of this aching world, and with deep humanity and beauty and boldness and humility, he pointed to God, and I think we need a fresh awakening of that.
When you, I wish we could talk to you for 3 hours about this. Unbelievable. The book is A Burning in My Bones. It's the authorized biography of Eugene Peterson. You can get it wherever books are sold. When you have given the church an incredible gift, and we're so grateful for your labor. We're so grateful for the love that you brought to this. And I think if I can just give you a compliment on this, I think when I got done reading it, I didn't think, you're an amazing writer, but I didn't walk away going, wow, Wynn is so amazing. Nor did I walk away having another like, wow, Eugene Peterson. I walked away going, my life has dignity. And my calling has dignity. And I hope that the pastors, especially that read this book, that they feel that as they read A Burning in My Bones. It's such a great read. We're so grateful for you. God bless you and all that you're up to.